Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Miramore Six Nations podcast. My name is Alex Spink, and once again, I'm delighted to be joined by World Cup winner and Mirror rugby columnist Paul Grayson. On this episode, we preview the Grand Slam and Triple Crown eliminator, if not necessarily title decider, that is Wales versus England. We ask whether France can get any worse, if Scotland, their opponents in Paris this Saturday, can get any more unlucky with injuries, and whether it is even worth Italy, winless in the Six Nations since 2015, from turning up in Rome against Ireland. In a minute or two, views from inside the Wales and England camps from Neil Squires, rugby correspondent of The Express, and Andy Howell, his counterpart at Wales Online. But first, Grace, England have had a fortnight to prepare for the showdown at the Principality, whereas Wales's players played for their clubs just last weekend. How much of an advantage does that give Eddie Jones's team?
Yeah, it's a difficult one to sort of try and quantify, isn't it? Because very often when you're... I know Test match rugby is extremely punishing physically on the body, but England have looked so good back-to-back that almost you didn't want to upset that rhythm. And they'd have been... You sort of felt watching on that they'd have been good to go the week after, no matter who they're playing. They're in such good form and so full of energy. It's like, bring on the next, you know, let's not break that rhythm. But with the extra week off, obviously, that's... It rests some bodies. England get what they pay for, as in their players rest. Obviously, Wales, slightly different. Dan Bigger coming back to Northampton, and even though he was carrying a little bit of a knock, still started the game for Northampton, only lasted 20 minutes, but nevertheless had to come and do that while all England stars bar, I think, was it Dan Robson, just about,
yeah,
maybe a couple of others, went back to their clubs and played because they needed some game time. So it's what the RFU pay for. It's what any international coach would want, that downtime in the week to absolutely freshen and patch up bumps and bruises. But it's an interesting one, isn't it, when you are playing that well, that just breaks the rhythm a little bit.
I must ask you about Dan Bigger. Obviously, you worked with him at Northampton. It was quite surprising to see such a key man who had apparently come off the game last weekend, or sorry, the week before that in Wales, in Italy, with a knock, to be starting for Saints at the week. Were you surprised by that?
No, not given the contracts that players sign and the deal that everybody's aware of in terms of England players. And if you're outside that England bubble, if you're expected to play, in between, that's kind of the deal. Otherwise, what's the point? What is the point England paying to get their players rested when anybody could just come in and kind of do the same? And also from Dan Bigger's standpoint, he's shown fantastic tenacity and leadership at Northampton already, understands the position that the club are in, and was very happy to come back and put his shoulder to the wheel for the club, even though he might have only been 95% when he started the game. I think that's indicative of his character.
So in summary, can we say that the Wales players come out of that club weekend slightly more battle-hardened? England perhaps had lost a little bit of momentum? Is it as simple as that, or both sides not read too much into it?
No, I don't think the break is long enough. Just 1 week. It's purely from an England point of view, my view is that just from a hunger point of view, it's like, right, we're ready, bring Wales on straight away, we'll just roll into the next one. But actually, physically, having a break at this point is exactly what they need to freshen up. So I would say, on balance, it advantage England in that regard.
Grace, give us an insight into the Anglo-Welsh rivalry from a player's perspective. You played against some I think twice and won on both occasions. You experienced that rivalry. Is it intense and passionate as it's made out and as we on the other side of the whitewash kind of feel it?
Yeah, it is. 100%. I mean, players get on very well, and the Lions, British and Irish Lions, is a thing where you make friends outside those sort of respected professional rivalries where you've, I mean, from and with the Northampton hat on for a second, when I was playing, we drew the Scarlets, the Netherley Scarlets, a few times in the Heineken Cup, you know, and going down to Stradley Park and Ray Gravel just walking into your changing rooms 10 minutes before kickoff to come and wish you good luck, but not really. And you know, fantastic man. Everybody stops for Ray Gravel, but it's kind of like, that's a good, interesting time in that, Ray.
Time and place.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, an absolute hero, and as hard as they come. And I've lost at Stradley Park, and as soon as the final whistle goes, they play the Stereophonic song, "As long as we beat the English, we don't care." And that's, you know, and that's heartfelt from the people. Take the players out of it. The rugby society at large, which is, you know, pretty much everybody in that part of Wales, it's you genuinely feel it. Now, different people have different levels of dislike, perhaps, for England, if you can put it like that. Some are healthy respect, some are sort of fervent nationalistic passion that that's the only result that counts. And you want to rise to the challenge. From my own point of view, unfortunately, didn't actually get to play. I was picked to play twice in Wales and got injured twice. So I've never felt it on the field, which is probably one of my only rugby regrets, really.
Yeah.
Anybody who has played there will tell you that it is another level when they fancy you and they've got you where they want you. Having said that, the other side of it, going all the way back to Will Carling's era, you know, the big hurdle to get over if you were going to achieve something was winning away in Wales on their way to Grand Slams and kind of proving themselves as a team. So I think the rivalry is, yeah, huge off the field. Certainly it's given, that's reflected in the way the contests go on the field. And being an Englishman, you know that everybody wants to beat you. That's fine. That is a given. This one just goes up a notch.
Yeah, I can remember Matt Dawson telling me that standing on the field at the Millennium Stadium, as it then was, he said you can actually feel the sound from the crowd on your face. You can actually, it's almost a kind of G-force.
Yeah, incredibly, as it reverberates, yeah. The sound waves reverberate around that stadium, and it's an impeccable rugby cathedral, if you like. Proximity of the crowd to the touchline, steepness of the stands, and the fact you can shut the roof and close it all in, it is a magnificent place to play, but amplifies those feelings and the noise levels almost seems tenfold, I guess. Mm. So it is absolutely huge, and also depending on what era you're in, you generally they don't lose many games at home in the Six Nations, and have been the best of the home nations over the last, well, Warren Gatland's time there, but the most successful. Mm. So it earns its respect, but it is a body and soul experience.
Okay, so England without Maritoji Makuvanopola, we've discussed that in previous weeks, but they've had 2 weeks to prepare for Wales. How will they have spent that time? What is the process that, as an international team, you go through from finishing one game to preparing for the next one at this level?
Yeah, they'll keep things as normal as possible, but it's review and learn from the game that you've played, the things that you were trying to do. So, I mean, England would have been very pleased with the way that they took France apart, but also they would look at that and say, well, they offered us some stuff that international teams don't very often offer you that easily and over again. We took it, and that was the game was done in half an hour. So they will I don't think they'll look hugely deeply into that game. They'll be pleased at the performance levels for a period of time, notwithstanding the opposition, and then move on. I think they'll probably have a little conditioning day or two whilst looking, having time to really get into the nitty-gritty of what they want to try and do against Wales, because it's hard. You can't analyse Wales too much in certainly the first two games of this championship, because the worst half of Welsh rugby in 10 years probably in the first half against France in Paris, and a solid comeback in the rain in the second half, but didn't teach you anything about what they're trying to do with Gareth Anscombe at fly half, let's say. And then a completely changed team in Italy, which will be totally different again this weekend. So there's not too much meat on that bone for England to get their teeth into. They could look back at some of the systems and some of the stuff that Wales did in the autumn, but in terms of absolute analysis, I would think England would be pretty much looking at themselves and what they want to try and get on the field, with an eye on not second guessing selection a little bit. I think England probably bank on Anscombe starting.
Yeah,
and I'm sure if they haven't got a plan for him to give him a squeeze, I'd be surprised.
Okay, so you start off by maybe reviewing the tapes of the opposition and then preparing a game plan, and then spend the majority of the time just working on yourself, your own game plan, how you're going to put that on the park.
I think so, because the detail, offensively and defensively, I mean, England have clearly been tuning up well in defence. John Mitchell's doing a good job and has brought a different, slightly different type of defence into the England team, and that is something that they've clearly bought into and has moved forward. It'll be tested a lot against Wales, I would think, if they do go with Anscombe. They have got designs on trying to widen the play and really ask some questions ball in hand. So they'll be working without the ball quite a lot to make sure that their back three are perfect and positioning of players in their exit sets, as they call them these days, getting out of your own half and kick chase and all that sort of stuff. So they're constant work-ons, and you're always adding or looking to add more skills, more, you know, defensive skills, whether it's particular footwork patterns to get you in a position to make a tackle or double tackle or communication drills. So they'll do that with and without the ball. And it's clearly working, because I don't think we've seen the best of England in attack yet. We've seen two performances where they've been, what, 60-40 maybe in possession, in the negative. So we've seen them stop opposition really well and be very effective when they've got the ball. I would like to think there's some more attacking stuff to come, and that's just part of being together, and they've been together quite a while now, and that extra week will give you time to put some more detail into how they want to open up the Welsh defence with the ball in hand.
Okay, so England have the capacity to get better. That's something for Wales to think about. Let's pause for a moment just to get to the views from inside the Dragon's Lair with our man Andy Howell. Andy, Wales 80 minutes from a national record 12th consecutive win, yet the bookies have England odds on favourites. Is that likely to provoke a reaction, do you think, mate?
I think Wales are happy with to have underdog status, and the mood in the camp is they're quietly confident. They know they can play a lot better than they have in the opening two matches, though they managed to win both those. They weren't convincing, but you know they play in England, and of course they're going to raise their game against the English, because you know the players have been talking this week. George North yesterday, you know, it's England and Wales. It means more than anything, really, I guess, outside a World Cup final.
Hadley Parks, I see, saying on the BBC today that there's been more of an edge around the camp this week. I guess you'd expect that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, this is the big one, isn't it? It's in Cardiff. The build-up has been massive for it. You know, I think it's been a bigger build-up than probably the 2013 game when England came to Cardiff chasing a Grand Slam, had the title in their pocket virtually, and Wales mugged them for it with a record 30 points to 3 victory. I think this is building up as well for another massive clash.
Yeah, that game in 2013 was truly extraordinary, and not just because I was on BBC Wales having to make the case for England the night before and getting absolutely heaps the following day, as you can imagine.
Yeah, well, I think that was one of the greatest Welsh performances I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, which was just my luck. You've been in around the Wales camp this week. Have you found the players to be tense or relaxed?
Quite relaxed. They watched a play, a one-man play, about of Ray Gravel.
Yes.
One-man play, and it was staged in the England changing room at the Principality Stadium. Apparently the guy who plays him, his name is Gareth Bale. It's not a footballer, but an actor, Gareth J. Bale.
This is all fantastic. A joke, yeah? You're joking, of course.
No, honestly, you know, because when we were told this by Robin McBride, the Wales forwards coach, said about Gareth Bale, and of course the press corps, we all thought, well, Gareth Bale's been along. Was he giving him a demonstration in football skills or something? And it turned out, no, this chap's name is Gareth J. Bale. He's an actor. And he did this play for them. And McBride himself, Ken Owens, the Wales and the Lions reserve, they were reduced to tears. Because apparently this guy was so like Ray Gravel, who, of course, those players knew well, being from Llanelli and the Scarlets.
Yeah,
and you know, interestingly though, it was staged in the England changing room, and obviously some motive. And it was, you know, when the chap playing Gravel, you know, what it was like facing Wales in his day, and you know, stuff on books and all that. I think it's doing the job, perhaps, of winding the Wales players up. McBride said, if there's the same amount of emotion on Saturday, there'll only be one result.
Well, that's fascinating. I remember a few years ago, somebody from Wales leaving a load of life-size cardboard cutouts of the Wales team in the England changing room before they played in the very same stadium. So they obviously get something from giving the tail a tweak a little bit of the England team.
That's right, yeah. And of course, I think they wanted it to get out there, so perhaps they niggle away at the England squad, because I'm sure Eddie Jones and the rest of them in the camp, they would have heard about it. And, you know, obviously it's a motivational tool. What Wales got to be careful of, like England, I guess, is they don't peak emotionally before Saturday. So they burn out when they go on a pitch. They got to, you know, peak for 4:45 on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, we know from covering this fixture from our respective sides of the bridge for the last 20, 30, oh, goodness knows how many years. Yeah. We know how big a part kind of mind games do play in this fixture. Nonetheless, when it actually comes to the game at the weekend, we've both seen how well England have played and how pretty ordinarily Wales have played so far. If Wales are going to win this fixture, beat England, how are they going to do it?
Well, of course, they've got to raise their game significantly. They've got to cut out the mistakes they've been making. They've been making so many errors, many of them unforced. So Wales got to play, I would say, at their best or very near their best to have a chance. That's assuming England play like they have been in this championship. Of course, England could have an off day, you don't know, with the pressure and the atmosphere. Let's hope both teams at their best. So it's a great game, and Wales are going to have a really tight defence. And I think more than anything, their big names, Jonathan Davis, George North, Liam Williams, Ross Moriarty, Alan Wynne-Jones, Ken Owens are going to really, you have to be at their very best. They're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to step it right up, and they're going to have to lead the team. And then I think Wales are in with a chance. I think it'd be a really tight game then, but it could go either way. There's a bit of a fear in Wales, that Wales perform as they have been doing in the championship. England at their straps, and England could, you know, England winning quite well.
And what is your thought? What do you think is going to happen? I get the impression that you think that if Wales bring their A game, they can win this.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah. I must say, you know, England are favourites, in my opinion. They are slight favourites because, and I say that as well, because even though they played well in Ireland, the game was still decided on fine margins. Three mistakes from Ireland. Three of the English tries came from mistakes. And I thought Ireland played the wrong game tactically. Johnny Sexton should have kicked the ball a lot more himself. They played into England's hands. And France were the shambles. They didn't have a fullback, basically. And England could do what they wanted with them. I think any good team would have taken France apart that day. So, you know, Wales are as good as Ireland, and they're as good as England on their day. There's not much in it between those teams. So if Wales can apply pressure in the right places, if they can perhaps actually Johnny May, although he's been outstanding, Wales will be looking to test his defence and turn him and play on him. And I suspect England will be looking to play on George North, like they did in 2016. They played on Alex Cuthbert and they destroyed him, really. Yeah. And I would have thought they'd be attacking George North side of the pitch all the time and kicking on him a lot.
Just looking at the odds, I see William Hill make Wales 9-5 against England, 15-8 on. So there's money to be made if Wales come in, as you think.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And you know, there's the Cardiff factor as well, isn't it? It's Principality Stadium. Factor, Wales are at home. Yeah, there will be a lot of English fans there, but the Welsh fans are going to be right behind the team. You know, the drive into Cardiff, the ears on the back of the players' necks are going to be standing up on a drive in when they're going through all the support on the streets. So these Welsh players, I think they're going to be really wound up for this game, and it's going to be a full, you know, it's going to be a full blown war, really, a rugby war.
Fascinating stuff. Well, Andy, we'll catch up next week to see how the whole thing plays out. Thank you for your time, mate. Always appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Grace, the importance of a good start can't be overestimated. And England have been very, very hot on that in the last five tests, haven't they? Scoring tries in, what, the first 3 minutes of, I think, of each of them. Will Wales and Warren Gatland be really alive to that?
Yeah, they're going to have to be, because England have, particularly the first game, you know, the first minute and a bit of the championship, completely caught Ireland on the hop. With a multi-phase play that was really accurate, got their heaviest ball carriers into the game straight away, with Manu Tuilagi leading the charge. We talked about it in the build-up to the French game, and then in a minute they've got on the scoreboard, which is brilliant. But Gatland will have a plan for that.
Yeah.
Whether they win the kickoff or they don't win the kickoff, it'd be really interesting to see. Possibly if they're receiving the kickoff, you might expect them to say, fine, if you want to attack, you're going to attack relatively unstructured from counter-attack. So Wales look to keep the ball on the field, perhaps, and get as high, a little bit like they did second half in Paris, and get as high up the field as they can and stay well organised, because they know that long kick is coming. Keep the ball on the field so England can't launch from a set piece where everybody knows exactly what's coming next. Likewise, if they get a kickoff, you could almost say they'll give England, force England deep, and maybe give them play 14 in the line or something like that to try and force England to kick it off and concede possession early to Wales. So they'll have something up their sleeve to try and take the sting out of England's intent to establish themselves on the scoreboard straight away.
Yeah, because I mean, Wales are no mugs, are they? Gatland is, his credentials are well known. Sean Edwards' defences have been terrific for as long as we can remember, and they're actually going to have a specialist fullback playing, unlike Ireland and France. You know, it probably won't be Lee Halfpenny, it'll probably be Lee Williams, but they're going to have quality in the 15 shirt. And as they showed at Twickenham last year, when they only conceded two penalties all game, they have discipline. They can play with discipline when they need to.
Yeah, and they rise to the challenges set by Gatland and Edwards, and that, you know, generally the bigger the game, the better Wales play. And whatever those, it energises a team sometimes when you've got a specific plan for a team. You're not really changing your structure, but you might just be changing your focus a little bit, and it might be in where and when you compete for the ball, or it might be a fraction of a change in how you commit to the first tackle, or a particular ball carrier is dealt with in a particular way. And that's quite an energising thing for a team to go in, because it gives you absolute clarity at certain points in a match, whether that be how you target Billy Vunipola, let's say, and whether they know they're going to double up on him, or they might even commit a third man if they can knock him on the floor and actually, let's commit a third man from the inside to that ruck to try and destabilise England's clearers and slow the ball down. That sort of thing takes you to a positive mental place, because it's about what you can do to affect a good player like that, rather than the fear of what he's going to do to you. So I would expect Wales to be at their brilliant best in defence.
Games as big as this often come down to the small moments, don't they? The key moments. And in the last two England-Wales games, which have both been incredibly tight, but those key moments have gone England's way thanks to remarkable plays from Sam Underhill with his defence on Scott Williams, last year at Twickenham, which saved an absolutely certain try. And then a year previous to that, the final couple of minutes of the game, Jonathan Davis, Wales, failed to clear their lines and make touch. George Ford, Owen Farrell zing the ball across the field. Elliot Daly runs it in for the try. Two games, two key moments, both nailed by England. They're going to have to be that sharp again?
Yeah, I think they are, because I genuinely think that the game will... I think the game will have plenty of rugby in it, but I think the quality of both teams defensively might mean that actual clear-cut opportunities to score might be few and far between. If you follow some sort of twisted logic of he's going to play loads of rugby, ergo lots of chances, not necessarily lots of defences put under stress, but defences able to cope, but being kind of on the edge. So when you get your chance, you've got to take it. And think about that, particularly the Elliot Daly try. The quality of the passes to span the 65 metres across the field for Elliot Daly not to break stride and lose one centimetre of forward momentum meant he could just carve around the outside and score that try. It was a brilliant bit of collective skill from England. Those two passes were fantastic, and his pace. So it could very well come down to something like that. And you know, Jonathan Davis made the mistake that day. It wasn't a massive mistake, but 5 or 6 seconds later, they're under their own post. So it's, and to be honest, Alex, it's what Test match rugby should be all about, shouldn't it? You've got two teams who are right up there in the world rankings, and a game where the opportunity to go for everything in tournament terms is on the line. You would expect a game of the highest quality where it takes something world class to win it.
Okay, right. Let's pause for a moment. Let's get down to Pennyhill Park, England's training base, for a word with Neil Squires. Okay, we're just walking away from the England training, which I've been watching in the company of Neil Squires, Daily Express rugby correspondent. And Neil, I guess one of the points that we've kind of been chatting about this week is all of a sudden that what used to be perhaps a slightly colourless England team is full of a lot of characters these days, isn't it? I mean, it's a remarkable thing that, you know, Johnny May scores his hat-trick last week, and the former players are talking about he used to be possessed by chickens and all sorts of nonsense like this. Ellis Genge has got some strange tales to tell as well. I mean, what are your observations on this group that we're working with?
Well, they do seem to be flowering a bit, don't they? There's a couple of interesting characters in the front row. The front row tends to produce them more than other areas, possibly. Ellis Genge, he's certainly... got a bit of edge to him, but he's also, you know, good value. I remember going to interview him in Leicester earlier this season. He turned up in a pair of goggles.
That was bizarre.
Very bizarre.
And didn't take them off for the duration of the interview.
16 minutes later, gets up, walks off. Very good interview, actually.
Now we discover he says nothing of any great interest in his interview, then took his shoe off and he's covered in tattoos of logos and teams he's played against.
Well, let's hope he doesn't become a 150 capper, otherwise he wouldn't be able to run. But there's, he's an interesting character. Kyle Sinclair, he's a very colourful, larger-than-life figure as well.
He used to be, as a kid, the legend is that he wanted to be a dinosaur and his mum had to stop him eating leaves.
Well, not only wanted to be a dinosaur, but actually thought he was a dinosaur, which is, you know, an interesting position to be in, isn't it? But, you know, he's a big boy, but he's not quite Brontosaurus size, is he?
We had Joe Marler before these two, of course. He set the standards and in a lot of ways for his slightly zany, crazy personality. But I guess what, in summary, are we saying that this is actually very healthy for this England team, that they're not just slightly automatons, robots talking about just wanting to get better all the time? Well, all of a sudden, we're seeing a little bit of colour about them, a little bit of humanity.
Well, I think every group needs different personalities in there, otherwise they become very vanilla and all think the same way. You know, you get characters like Johnny May in the side. He's a very unusual free thinker. There's a couple of others as well. Tom Curry, I think I'd like to have a proper chat with him, I think, one day, because I think there's a bit of May about him as well. He likes to turn... he's a bit OCD, actually. Turns switches off in rooms that are on without plugs in. Yeah, but he's quite an unusual character too. But, yeah, there's a few in there, and I think that it is healthy for the group. Eddie himself, of course, is also a colourful character at the top of the whole tree. So, sometimes his personality rather crowded the others out early on, but I think that a few more have been allowed to flower now.
I think that's true, and I think Henry Slade is another one, slightly OCD. I seem to remember him saying that he used to cut his lawn with nail clippers outside just to get them perfect. I'm sure he would deny that. But anyway, as a result of all this, England go down to Wales in pretty good heart, pretty good humour. And what are you expecting this weekend? Just in summary, are you expecting England to carry on their winning ways or for Wales to carry on theirs?
Well, pre-tournament, I was going for a Wales title. The evidence of the first two games is that England are the superior side in the Championship. They've played by far the best rugby. But Wales have it in them to produce a very big performance there. I think this is going to be an absolute cracker. I'm still going to go with Wales by a couple of points.
Thank you, Twazi.
Grace, you said before the France game that you thought England were good for a 20-point-plus win, which proved to be correct. In the final reckoning on this game this weekend, I would make England, based on the momentum that they have, favourites to win it, but not by a great amount because of the tension they're going to encounter when they get down and the performance which you know Wales are going to produce. How do you see it? Can you put a number on what you think either Wales or England are going to win this by?
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because you go through the England team and the Wales team and put some head-to-heads down on paper, and there are clearly one or two players who won't have been in that situation before. Look, you know, the two guys either side of Billy Vunipola in the back row, Ben Moon. You would expect Wales to have a plan for Kyle Sinclair and potentially Owen Farrell in terms of just getting in their ear or trying to get a reaction from a couple of players who have got relatively short fuses or could get sidetracked from their job. You know, you've got a battle Tuilagi against Hadley Parks. Parks has been probably average by his own standards so far. That's a big clash. I can almost see Tuilagi. You're waiting for him to properly... He's played really well the last two games, but you want a breakout performance, what a game to do it in. So there's fine balances across the field. I think England probably, as a team, have the slight advantage, and then you're in the Principality, so that advantage immediately reduces just because of the psychological pressures and the dynamics of the game. So I think it's going to be incredibly tight. I have to back England to win just on their form and the fact that Wales have mixed their team up and not shown anything yet in the Championship. Which ridiculously makes them even more dangerous, doesn't it? Because you're not quite sure how well they can perform just kind of straight out of the box, big game, do or die. They fancy themselves to go on and win the Grand Slam, perhaps, if they can win this. So I think psychologically, England are... It's going to be harder for England than it is for Wales. Wales can easily get up and just ride the wave of emotion, but I think pound for pound, England are probably the better team at the moment, which means if you're going to put a score on it, it's less than a whole score. It's a 4 or 5 pointer, I think.
Okay, well, it will be fascinating, as you alluded to see how or to see whether Wales can get under the skin of the likes of Kyle Sinclair, you mentioned Owen, obviously Ellis Genge is like to be involved in the 23.
Yeah.
There are some quite volatile characters, very good players who look as though they're getting a grip on their temperament, but it will be sorely tested under that roof.
Oh, completely, and I don't say that as a slight against those players at all, because you need a bit of that to make you the player that you are, or to give you that little bit of edge. But even in England at a canter against France, I can't remember who Sinclair whacked on the head.
Yeah, the French lock, the Touré.
Yeah, and that, as much as it amused me, that's what you get told off for these days. It was slightly petulant, but under the sort of white hot scrutiny that you're going to get emotionally, as well as a bit of a physical dealing to in Wales, those are the sort of things that, if England have ticked all their boxes of preparation, any tactics to do that will be laughed off, and you're wasting your energy. If you get no reaction, you've wasted energy that should go into the game. So, yeah, fascinating stuff.
You talk about white-hot scrutiny down in the Principality.
there's going to be some pretty white-hot scrutiny on France this weekend, isn't there, in Paris. They're up against an injury-riddled Scotland team, but really they're playing themselves, aren't they? They have to try to discover something after what was just horrible at Twickenham.
Yeah, and in the aftermath of Twickenham is your indicator, isn't it, when Parrott comes out and starts to open up about, hang on a minute, we're taking all the blame here, but we're not getting taught anything. We haven't got a game plan. We're not preparing to play anyone. We're just picking a team and turning up. I paraphrase, of course, but it's pardon the pun. But he's almost just broken the seal on. We are seriously not happy with this. We've kept our heads down and tried our best, but we're not happy with the situation that we find ourselves in. And that is when you expect him, Lopez, Picamole, Girardo to say, right, now we've sort of half let the genie out of the bottle of our disquiet. It's up to us to potentially put something together and almost take over the team, really.
The problem is that Lopez and Parra have both been dropped for daring to speak out.
And that's the coach's prerogative, isn't it? Because ultimately he's in control of the team, and with Entermax playing fly half, isn't he? The 3 weeks he's had, make your debut, get dropped, and then come back in a different position.
Yeah,
doesn't give you any confidence, does it? There is a coherent strategy behind what France are trying to do. On the flip of a coin, they could go out and tear it up. I fear for Scotland because they're just, in terms of resources of human beings, they're starting to run out a bit.
And they haven't won in Paris for 20 years.
1999. So, yeah, there is that thing of history repeating itself when the dates are right, but it would be a remarkable one.
Yeah, okay. It sounds to me as though you think that France are going to win that game.
I don't know whether I'm just being stupidly emotional about it or not, Spinky, because it's like, please do something. Just do something.
Yeah.
Because I was in Paris for the first weekend, Wales at home on a Friday night, and notwithstanding how many people got stuck in Wales, there were a lot of tickets that were unsold for the opening day of the Six Nations at home against Wales, which means the French public are getting fed up.
Yeah. Okay. Italy-Ireland is the other fixture this weekend. Italy haven't won a Six Nations game for years. Ireland started with a heavy defeat against England, came back, won in Scotland. They weren't that great, were they? But nonetheless, they're back on the horse. And if England slip up in Wales, they can still win the championship. So a big game for Ireland to keep their focus. And significantly, they have to get a bonus point.
Yeah, and you know what? Can you see them not doing that? Because as much as we talk about Italy and how well Benetton are doing and the systems that are being put in place in Italy to help the national team, they haven't showed up, have they, in the first two rounds of this tournament? They haven't shown anything to suggest that that they've got the stomach for the fight, let alone the technical expertise to stay in it. So disappointingly, from a tournament point of view, I can't see anything other than a fairly comfortable bonus point win for Ireland, which is not how it should be, really, in a Six Nations tournament.
Well, England will play Italy next, so we will get stuck into the future of Italian rugby in a forthcoming podcast. For the time being, Grace, thank you for your time. Good to catch up. Good to get your views on what's going to be a really, really big weekend in the Guinness Six Nations Championship. Paul Grayson brought to us in association with Gilbert. Grace, we'll talk next week.
Cheers, mate.